Welcome to the silence. On retreats here at IRC, we usually have a theme for the week in terms of the talks that we offer, an orientation for the teachings that we'll be offering this week. And this week, we chose to orient our teachings around the Noble Eightfold Path. Even this word path is kind of a reminder to us that the work that we're exploring here, what we're walking into, is a journey. An exploration. And our journey here on retreat, and it's often helpful to have that notion of this being an exploration of what's happening in our experience. This journey isn't about getting somewhere else. It's really about arriving here. This journey is about deeply arriving here and now. And part of our path is exploring, beginning to understand what keeps us from arriving here. And so this path, the Eightfold Path that the Buddha offered, it's a really practical orientation to our lives, an orientation to how to be in the present moment, how to be living, essentially. And so as with a path, if we think of the image of a path of a path in the woods or a trail that we may follow. That trail in the woods is something that is created because many, many people have walked that direction. And kind of similarly, this path that the Buddha offers has been explored down the centuries by many, many people, and essentially handed from person to person with guidance, suggestions. Live this way. Look here. Be here. And so the Eightfold Path, I think of as a really practical guidance for us. It's not abstract. It really is a way of living, engaging, guided by wisdom. And the wisdom of the Buddha is really oriented around what he understood to be essentially, I guess we could say, the problem of a human existence, the he set out on his own journey with the question, something along the lines of, why do we suffer? And is it possible to be free from suffering? And in his own journey, he found an answer to that question and offered us this path as a way to help us to find our own answer to the question. And so these aspects of the Eightfold Path are, they're not things that are just meant to be transmitted and learned intellectually, although we have to start there. We have to start with some of the understanding that the Buddha came to. Largely, he came to an understanding that it is stuff in our own minds, it's ways that our own mind works that essentially keep us caught in this cycle of struggle and suffering. We hold on to wanting things to be a certain way or resist things the way they are. And that very holding on, that very resistance and the confusion that is resulting is the very place where our suffering is born. It's not born out there in the world. We think it is. We think the problem is out there. That if only everything out there were fixed just the way we'd like it to be, then there wouldn't be any suffering. Then there wouldn't be any problem. But the Buddha actually recognized that trying to control, trying to manipulate the environment is ultimately it's not possible to have everything in our environment to be under control, under our own control. And that the way that we are struggling to keep get it under control, that's the place to look, he said. And so this is his part of the wisdom that he offers us, this view, this first aspect of the Eightfold Path is wise view, this orientation towards, rather than looking outside of us to find happiness, rather looking within and seeing how we struggle, how the mind struggles with things as they are. So the processes of struggle, of suffering, are processes that are essentially born in our own minds. With this understanding, and with the guidance that the Buddha actually found a way towards happiness through looking into his own mind, I think in a way what he is encouraging us to do is to look at the ways that we are preventing ourselves from arriving here, preventing ourselves from fully arriving here. Because it is those very processes of trying to fix or to want or to get rid of that have us leaping out of being here. And so the Buddha discovered this possibility, this path, and said, it's possible. It is possible to have a kind of happiness that is not reliant on what's happening outside of us. It's not reliant on what's happening in the world through a process of letting go of trying to control, to fix, to change, to hold on. In that very letting go, there is freedom, there is peace, there is ease. And so hearing that possibility, that there are things that we can engage in. And this is really the whole Eightfold Path. They are, I think of them as practices. They are tools that help us to understand our minds, tools that help us to move in the direction away from the patterns that catch us in struggle and suffering and move more in the direction of patterns that support ease, peace in our lives. And so hearing this, all of you actually have taken a step. This next aspect of the Eightfold Path, wise intention, is taking the step onto the path, beginning to engage with practices, engage with these tools. And taking this step, we begin to explore both outer and inner ways that we struggle or get caught. The next three aspects of the Eightfold Path are exploring the terrain of our relationships, our harmony, a sense of coming into harmony with the world. These are the aspects of ethics in the Eightfold Path. And they're practices of ethics, practices of wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood. And here on retreat, we engage with these practices of ethics through refraining from actions that tend to cause struggle or harm, that tend to cause particularly harm to others, but in the process often rebounds on us and causes us harm. Here on retreat, we engage in this aspect of the Eightfold Path. It's really a kind of a part of the container of the retreat that we land here together with an agreement to follow the five precepts, refraining from taking life, refraining from killing living beings, refraining from taking that which is not freely offered, refraining from sexual misconduct, and here on retreat, refraining from, essentially practice, we'll be practicing celibacy, refraining from false speech, and here on retreat we'll be practicing noble silence, and refraining from intoxicants, which cloud the mind. So the container of the retreat is held in the field of this agreement that we come together and agree to these guidelines. Agreeing to these guidelines creates a container of safety for all of us, creates a sense of non-harming, an environment of non-harming. And that environment, both for as a gift to others and as both as a gift to ourselves and receiving the gift from others, begins to allow us to more deeply explore the inner landscape of our minds. Because in engaging in these five precepts, in refraining from taking life, refraining from taking that which is not given, refraining from sexual activity, refraining from false speech, and refraining from intoxicants, we are creating this container of non-harming. It's a place that we can land and have the sense that it's okay to make this journey into right here and right now. If we were engaging in unskillful conduct, then our mind tends to be running out all over the place trying to figure out how to correct the problem or justify ourselves or all kinds of ways that our mind gets caught and spins when we are not engaging in this terrain of non-harming. And so it supports not only others, but it supports our own minds. The Buddha said that the benefit to ourselves of engaging in these precepts is the bliss of blamelessness. And that It's a very natural outcome of engaging ethically that we are free from remorse. And that being free from remorse, it's very natural that ease and delight will arise. And so our path begins to unfold by holding this container of the precepts. And that allows us to do the inner work offered by the last three aspects of the Eightfold Path: wise effort, wise mindfulness, wise concentration. And this inner work is really necessary because, as the Buddha pointed out, it's our own minds that catch us, our own minds that create the struggle. And so an exploration of, as the Buddha said in the First Noble Truth, suffering, dukkha, is meant to be understood. And so these three aspects, wise effort, wise mindfulness, wise concentration, help us to understand this dukkha in our own minds. Understanding this dukkha, there's a natural way in which the mind begins to find its way to let go of those causes. The mind begins to understand its way to letting go of the ways we get caught, struggle, the ways we hold on, the ways we push away. And this exploration of understanding suffering begins to allow the mind to let go of the causes of suffering. And so we practice the effort, we make the effort to stay present, we make the effort to bring our mindfulness into the present moment, observing, exploring here and now. And this practice of bringing these two together, of bringing wise effort and wise mindfulness together, generates, cultivates wise concentration. These three aspects of the Eightfold Path really working together. We can't really tease them apart. They really are very intertwined. And these three begin to really help us to understand the truth of what the Buddha brought, the wisdom that he started us on this path with, that the struggle really is in our own minds. And seeing that, not an intellectual seeing, not an intellectual understanding, but a realization of that seeing how our minds get caught, seeing how the letting go of that brings that sense of ease and peace. That is the, we kind of cycle back to the wisdom of the Buddha, but this time it's more in our bones. It's more an understanding that we have for ourselves, not something that is just told to us. And this is the real benefit of this practice, that we walk the path for ourselves. We arrive ourselves and understand for ourselves. And so we'll be going on this journey together this week and exploring these practices, these tools of the Eightfold Path.
Here we are. And that's meant to be a profound statement. And here we are. And before we go any further, do you have any questions about now you've been here for a few hours that would help you feel more settled about being here? Any practical things? Your room, you have your blankets, you know where the bathrooms are, anything you need. So it all seems pretty straightforward. Or you trust that everything will be revealed as you go along. I think some people, after they've been here for a while, kind of appreciate that there's an overall kind of system in place, kind of unfolding the place, and it's all set up and planned carefully in a certain way, and so you can just kind of trust the unfolding. I want to say something about the chairs up here in the meditation hall. There's plenty of chairs, I'm happy, you know, to use. But we're very aware that, the chairs aren't universal, so that depending on all kinds of body size or whatever, that the chairs we have here might not be the most suited for you. So you're welcome to bring in other chairs if other chairs work better. Just about any chair that you can find in the building, you can bring up here. A year ago, someone brought up those kind of easy chairs that Andrea and I sat in. They brought up here, and it's because that's, I thought that would serve them the best. And or the chairs from the dining room. There's more chairs like that around in the closets in your room, and those other turquoise chairs downstairs and the rollers. You can roll them up here in the elevator. Anyway, the idea being that please, if there's other chairs that work better for you, please use them. And then if you haven't seen it already, there's also these foot pads for the chairs. If your feet don't reach the floor properly, sort of squarely, then there's these black foam pads you can put under your feet so you can feel some good support there. So the formal beginning of a retreat is marked by a little ritual. Ceremony called going for refuge and taking the precepts. And the precepts are the five precepts that Andrea mentioned earlier. And the refuges are stated by saying the words, "I go for refuge," and then in the Buddha, in the Dharma, and in the Sangha. But the idea that I go for refuge is an interesting statement, because the I go part is clearly intentional, something we do, we choose for ourselves. But refuge is like it's almost like a synonym for refuge is safety. A place you go that's safe and protected, protection. And whereas you go, the intentional aspect of what you do, you take some responsibility to go in the direction of, to go into this, to a place, to an understanding that creates safety. But that safety is not something you create exactly. The refuge is not something you create so much, but something you align yourself with, something that you call upon or evoke or are inspired by, or find meaningful, or gives you kind of a North Star that you can kind of guide your way. But the idea of safety I like a lot. You enter into a place of safety. And these three things that are considered the safe places to go, the inspiring places to go, is the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. But the ancient tradition doesn't say it's the Buddha himself as a person, but says when we go for refuge in the Buddha, we go to refuge in the awakening of the Buddha, the Bodhi of the Buddha. And this is his state of wakefulness, being awake. And there's something about being awake that is safe. And you might not always know it and always feel the safety of that, but to know through the example of the Buddha, the example of others, through maybe some of your own experience, that there's safety to be found in heading towards or looking for or relying on the great value, the great existential power of being awake. It's one of the most meaningful things a person can do in their life. It's one of the most dignified and worthy things to do, is to begin to awaken our capacity for wakefulness, to awaken our capacity to live aware and conscious without contracting or clinging, without resisting or being afraid or caught in greed or hate. It's a remarkable thing in this world that there's so much hate and fear and greed. And so to get a sense that, yeah, it's safe, there's a safe place to go, there's a safe place to align yourself, it's a safe place to be inspired by, yes, yes, this. There's the intentional part, what you have to do. It's not just like give up and let the Dharma take care of you, but you have to walk into that, you have to kind of align yourself by it. But then the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha is there to support you, to guide you, to create the safety for your life. So take refuge in the Buddha, take refuge in the Dharma. Not only it means the teaching, but it also means the way things unfold, the natural order of things. And the natural order of things supports us if we live in harmony with it. If we don't live in harmony with it, if again, things like greed and hate, delusion, are out of harmony with the natural order and creates disruption. And so to go for refuge in the Dharma is to go for refuge into that which is harmonious, that into that which doesn't disrupt ourselves or the world around us. And then to go for refuge in the Sangha, to go for refuge in the community that you're practicing with, to go for refuge in those people who have been the witness, have experienced degrees of wakefulness, so they know that it's a safe place, that their example shows you that even on your deathbed, there is a place you can go for refuge, for support, in that experience of wakefulness, or of clarity, or of letting go, or of peace that is available so close, that's found here. In the way that Andrea talked about, it's not really about a journey out, or a journey which is to get somewhere, you know, like a distance to go, but really to arrive here and to find out that here is safe if we're mindful. Here is safe if we're awake for what is happening here. So it's useful to take refuge at the beginning of a retreat, because in the course of the retreat, it's good to have that as your guide, as your support. And at times when the retreat is difficult, and any retreat which is worth its salt, any retreat which is really worthwhile doing, is going to have its difficulties. It wouldn't really be worthwhile if you come here and just bliss out the whole time, just like get concentrated and phew, that's what you do, right? Unfortunately, now I tell you, right? You should have had that in the literature before you came. I'm sorry. Because when we struggle, when there's difficulty, it means we're up against meeting something important in us. We never struggle without that struggle representing that something is important happening for us. We never struggle without the struggle representing that here is something important for you to meet in yourself and to work through, understand, do something. So we don't want you to struggle, exactly. But if you struggle, let's do it well. Let's meet it with our practice. Let's kind of find what's really that's about and see through it to the other side. So there is struggle, there is difficulties. And then when these difficulties come, it's useful to remember the refuges. There is a guiding star, there is a refuge, there's a place of safety, there is support for it as you go through it. And the Sangha is very important because many people have gone through. Chances are very, very good, extremely good. I'll say it differently. The chances are very, very low, extremely low, that you have figured out how to suffer in a new and creative way. If you struggle, if you have suffering, chances are pretty good. It's kind of like been done many times before. And what's more important is not only has it been done by others before, but they found a way through it. There is a practice, there is a path, the Eightfold Path, to find our way through it. You don't have to be discouraged or frightened or feel like it's impossible. So to go for refuge, so you have to go and then something will receive you. The safety is there waiting for you in the practice. And then to express that, to support that, to live that, to make it in kind of really explicit, we take the precepts. We commit ourselves to live by the precepts. And this has a certainly a practical value. The whole thing works a lot better if we're not killing each other here and stealing and all that. But I think, you know, you're all good people, and chances of this kind of breaking the precepts here are pretty small, I think. But it's not really a matter of following them, maybe, well, it is a matter of following literally, but the ritual of commitment, this is what we're doing, this is what we're about here, I think does something deep in the psyche. For you and for others who are here, something can relax. To know there's a place where there's a group of people that this is their commitment, this is their orientation, to live in an ethical way, as a gift to each other, to live in an ethical way, to create a community of safety. It's not so common in the world to have people come together and to feel this kind of safety that we have here. And so to commit to it together as a group allows something in the heart, in the mind, to relax and settle. And for a community as a whole as well, the whole community, I think, something gets grounded in doing it. So we chant the refuges and we chant the precepts as the formal beginning of the retreat. So if those of you who are new, the refuges we do in Pali, the ancient Buddhist language, and the precepts we do in English. We start off with what's called a salutation to the Buddha, kind of just paying our respects to the Buddha. Kind of without him, we wouldn't be here as a group, and we'd do something else. And then after that salutation to the Buddha, we go through the refuges in Pali, and we do it three times. And the second time, the prefix dutiyampi is said, which means second time, and the third time through is tatiyampi, which means the third time. And then we say, and the word for refuge is saranam, and the word for I go is gacchami. Then it's buddham saranam gacchami, dhammam saranam gacchami, sangham saranam gacchami. So the word order is reversed from English. So I'll start off by doing one word at a time for the refuges the first time through. Then I'll do the whole line. And you repeat after me. So you repeat one word after me, and then the whole line after me, and then we just repeat after me. Hopefully it's clear. Okay? So. Namo.
Namo.
Tassa.
Tassa.
Bhagavato. Arahato, Sammā, Sambuddhassa. So I'll repeat the whole line, and after me you can go. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato Sammā Sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Repeat after me the whole line, next line. Buddham saranam gacchami.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
Sangham saranam gacchami.
What did I miss? Oh, let's do it for ten. It still works. Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami.
Datiyampi buddham saranam gacchami.
Datiyampi buddham saranam gacchami.
Datiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami.
Datiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami.
Datiyampi sangham saranam gacchami.
Datiyampi sangham saranam gacchami.
And then we'll do the precepts, each one in two parts. So repeat after me. For the sake of our practice together,
for the sake of our practice together,
I commit myself not to kill.
I commit myself not to kill.
For the sake of our practice together,
for the sake of our practice together,
I commit myself not to take what is not given. For the sake of our practice together,
for the sake of our practice together,
I commit myself not to engage in sexual misconduct.
I commit myself not to engage in sexual misconduct.
For the sake of our practice together,
for the sake of our practice together,
I commit myself not to lie.
I commit myself not to lie.
For the sake of our practice together, I commit myself not to intoxicate body or mind.
I commit myself not to intoxicate body or mind.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the refuges and taking the precepts and agreeing to live this way. It's a wonderful thing. Thank you for coming here to practice at IRC. You should know that your presence, your individual presence, is a support for all the others here, just as their presence is support for you. So thank you for the gift of your practice and your presence. For those of you who are going to be the practice leaders, who are going to sit up here and lead the sittings, if you sit on a cushion, you sit here in my place, in this side over here. And if you can bring your cushion up here and sit. If you sit in a chair, I'll bring a chair over and put it over here so that you can, that chair can just live here, and you can put the bell right here on the edge. And there's this, usually the people use this clock here because you can see it most clearly. And if you don't remember the schedule while you're leading the sit, you can, the schedule's up here so you can check. And if you've never hit the bell, bell like this or this bell before, please, the first time you do it, err on the side of doing it lightly. So because you know, might, that might be kind of light, but even lighter, if, you know, just it, because the reason is that you can always correct for being too light, but you know, and you can't really correct for that. So you know, it's kind of jarring to get out of meditation that way, and so just be light, and you can always do it a lot. You know, learn to hit it, you know, but to do it stronger if it need be. And I think that's what you need to know. We're by design set up here, so it's 8:30, so you can go to bed early. Because, as I said, people are often tired, and I encourage you to go to bed and get a good night's sleep. If it's too early for you to go to sleep, you're welcome to stay up and keep sitting here and practicing, as you wish. But I wish you a good and deep and sound sleep for tonight.